Last week we were talking about the dynamic of fire and how fire pushes change, and how Chava, our mother, Eve, is the paradigm of fire. And I wanted to talk a little bit about this and to introduce a chiddush that is never been heard before, because it's a shtickle a hersh toira. Ulharchiv bir inin chava b'achilos meitz adas toivera. So this is just to talk a little bit about chava and the eating of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Tanam b'mishnah, we learn in the Mishnah Shabbos and Perik Beis Mishnah Hey. Hamachabes haner mipnei shu misyare mipnei agoyim. Somebody who extinguishes a flame on Shabbos because he's afraid of goyim. Gentiles, mipnei listim, because of robbers, kidnappers, mipnei ruach ruah, because of evil spirit. Vim bishvil achol eshiyish, and not for himself, but for somebody else, for a sick person who needs to have some dark so that they can sleep. Potur, extinguishing the flame, extinguishing the candle, the light, whatever it is, in circumstances or for reasons like that, is free of blame, patur, and there's no obligation then to bring a sin offering if it was by accident, or no punishment if it was in purpose, because it's blameless, patur. Pirush Rav Ovadia Bertinoro, the chief commentator to the Mishnah that we have, like he has the place of Rashi in the Gemara, is Rav Ovadia of Bertinoro, 15th century Italian scholar. And he's sort of printed in all the Mishnayos, and he gives a basic explanation of difficult words and concepts. So he says, he explains, what does it mean to extinguish a flame because of goyim? What does it mean? Ipnei goyim, he says, kigon parsim. The Farsis, the Persians, they had laws. She'ein menichin lahadlik or b'yoyim idam. They didn't allow anybody to use fire or light candles or any flames in their homes on certain days or festival days. It was only allowed in their temple. And that is because they were very much into mathematics. They had some Platonic ideas that the days, the year is 365 days long. But the year is 365, not 360. But they wanted it to gel with a circle. Their priests would say, for the next 5 days, nobody's allowed to, because the gods, this is like an in-between. It's not really on the calendar. Let's not draw attention to whatever. They had like silly ideas, right? Why you're not allowed to have candles or flame going on in your house. So now you live in Persia and it's Shabbos and you've lit candles, and then you realize that the goyim are out on the street looking for anybody who's got their candle. So you extinguish the flame. That is mipnei goyim, right? It's not that people hate you. Nobody's looking for you. But people are looking out for the flame. And if they see the light, they're going to come attack you. Mipnei listim. What does it mean because of robbers, kidnappers, brigands? Shlayiru sheyesham odom v'yuvoyu olav. Bertinu explains that there already, it's not the flame which is the problem. You're the problem. There are people out there who want to kill you or take you captive and sell you as a slave or whatever, and you need to hide the fact that there's anybody in the house. You don't want them to know that there's anybody alive here. So it's not about the flame. The flame's not the problem. It's your presence which is the problem that the flame is going to betray. So you put out the flame. So the third level is mipnei ruach ro. What does it mean, a ruach ro, an evil spirit? So the Bartinura, and he's bringing it from the Rambam. Ruach ro is a mood. An evil spirit doesn't mean a demon or something like that. It means just somebody's in a really bad mood. When he can't see, he feels better, right? So some people feel better in the dark. And the Rambam in his Pirshon Mishnayos, he says Ruach Ro Min Mimina Achoyle. It's a kind of illness. Habole Bale Morish Chorev, for people that have black bile. And black bile, you know, in ancient times, people were divided into four kinds because there was four humors. There was green bile, black bile, red bile, and white bile. And you know, one is the heart, one is the liver, one is the spleen, and so on. And one is the gallbladder. And if you had black bile, if you had green bile, it means you were phlegmatic. And if you had red bile, it was you were choleric. And if you had black bile, it meant you were melancholy. And melancholy meant that you had morish chore. Black bile meant you were sad, right? And even in the Rambam's time, you know, some people were depressed. Person who's depressed, you can't really predict what's going to make them feel better or worse. But there were some people who insisted on having the lights turned out. Kesheina royez atzmoy, or you know, either doesn't want to look at himself or does not want to be seen by anybody else. So that is how, and it's a very interesting halacha. These are the reasons for which it's basically permitted to extinguish a flame on Shabbos. The next Mishnah goes straight into a complete non sequitur. It says, "Al shalosh averos noshim mesos b'shas leidos." There are three sins for which women end up dying during childbirth. Al she'enem zehiros b'nida. They're not careful with the mitzvahs of nida. Challah, they don't take challah from the dough that they're baking. Hadlukas haner, and they're not careful about lighting the candles on Shabbos, for Shabbos. The kosher. So my question is, my shaychas mishnah zu dafke lekan. Why does this mishnah? Okay, you could argue that because we're talking about reasons for extinguishing candles on Shabbos. So the next mishnah says, and women who aren't careful about killing, right, lighting candles, so then. Never bad things happen to them in childbirth. Well, fair enough. But then the question is, and why doesn't it say it in Masechta Challah, where it's talking about Challah? Or why doesn't it say Masechta Nida, where it's talking about Nida? Why does it say it here in Masechta Shabbos? And why does it say it right next to the previous Mishnah? V'oid move b'yalkut. And there's another question, is like this. In the Medrash it says, Hadlokas aneh detonu rabbona minayin, shechayev odem liya zoi vizoriz badlokas aneh. How do you know that the mitzvah that the Chachamim said, we have to light our Shabbos candles, how do you know? Because it says, en neshayev ikurosu l'shabbos oineg, you got to make Shabbos into a pleasure. So the Prophet says, make Shabbos a pleasure. What pleasure have you got if you're sitting there trying to eat in the dark on Friday night, right, and you're in the cold and this and that? Zad lukas aneh. So we have, from the Pasuk in Yeshaya, we have proof that you've got to have lights in your house on Friday night, because it's a pleasure. V'lama nimsa le'isha. And why is it given to a woman? Omar Kodesh Baruch Hu, Rabbi Banishlem says, God says, He chibso neru shel oilam, she extinguished the light of the world. Shenema ner lekim nishmas odam. The candle of God is the soul of man. So, because she extinguished the light of the soul of man by giving Odam to eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, lefikach tishmer mitzvah ner, so let her keep the mitzvah of Ner. And then there's a similar reason for Challah, a similar reason for Nida. She destroyed the dough of the world, you know, the idea that Adam Arishan is like a dough that God baked, so therefore let her have a mitzvah of Challah in the dough. And also she spilled the blood of the world, so she has to keep the mitzvah of Nida. The kosher. So my question is, Halle, so now what do we find here? We find here that if you do a sin, you get a reward, you get a mitzvah. There's no such thing. We have a klal that we don't allow the criminal to benefit from the proceeds of the crime, right? If Eve had done such a terrible thing, then she wouldn't be rewarded with a mitzvah. She would be rewarded with a tikkun, right? You do this to fix that. But a mitzvah of Oinek Shabbos, How does that come to be a reward if it's a punishment? So I want to say like this. This is a medrash, interesting medrash, and the source of the medrash in the Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer. So this is how the medrash reads. Omru malachei ha'shores lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the ministering angels said to God, Ma odam v'toydi'ehu, what is man that you want to know him? Odam lehevel doma, man is like, what is he like? He's like the passing breath. He's nothing. Why are you bothering with him? Why are you giving him the Torah? Like, what is going on? Omer lehem, God said to the angels, Ma she'ata kuchem mekalsim oisi be'elyoino, all the great stuff that you do here in heaven and all the great big, you know, choirs of music and the gazillion harpists and all this stuff that you praise me with here in heaven, one little metzila there on the ground, he says, Kodosh, Kodosh, Kodosh. He says, Omen Yesh Merab. It's like, it's louder and more beautiful than all the music that you make me day and night. And what's more, Elisha Kodosh Shemois, that man down there, this Adam there, he names things. So the marriage continues, V'kivan Shiro'u Kain. Angels could see what was going on. Omru, they said, Im ein onu boim be'etze sheyechete lifnei boire, if we can't find some way of making him sin to his creator, ein onu yecholim, like we're not going to be able to beat him. And for some reason, it was very important for the angels to beat man, to somehow subdue him, get rid of him, just to get him into God's bad books. Very interesting medrash, right? So the medrash continues, V'hoya Samuel Sar Godol Bashamayim. So the angel, the biggest angel in heaven, is called Samuel. V'chaya is Ma'ar B'Knofayim. You know, the angels that are called living creatures, we learned in the previous parak, they have four wings. Usrofim, the fire angels, Mishesh K'nofayim, they have six wings. V'Samuel, this is how great Samuel is. Shtei Mesri, he has 12 wings, right? So this Samuel, he's the prince of light, right? He's the big wahuni. Ma'osa Samuel, so what does he do? He takes it upon himself to carry out the plot, the conspiracy. Lokach Katshaloi, he takes his whole pamalia, he takes his whole circus, the yorad, and he goes down from heaven. V'ro'o kolabriyos, and he looks at all the creatures on earth, v'le'motze b'em chochem lehoraka nochosh, and he doesn't find any creature that is a setup for doing evil like the serpent, right? Shenema v'hanochosh hoya'orum, the serpent is more sly than all the other creatures. V'hoysut musa ke'en gomo, at that point, the serpent doesn't look like he looks today. He has legs and he looks like a camel. I think talking about a dinosaur, right? Shein. V'hoysut musa ke'en gomel. So this nochash, the serpent, looks like a camel. V'olav v'rochav olav. So Samuel gets and he rides on this camel-looking serpent. V'hoysut ha'toyrut se'eka. So as he's going, the Torah starts to shout, Ke'es b'moraim tamriya. What's going on? There's like a rebellion going on in heaven. Riboin kol elomim, master of the world, tishak lesus lerichboy, do something. Grind down the horse and the rider, you know, do something. Moshe lamar dovadon, what's it like? Lo odem sheyesh boy ruach ro, it's like a person who's got this evil spirit in him. Kol ha'masim shu oise, everything that he does, v'chol ma shemedab, everything that he says, ein midato, he's out of his mind. He's insane. You can't blame a person who has got a ruach ro for anything that they did. So the serpent is being ridden by this Samuel. El midas ruach ro. It's everything the person's doing or saying is in the power of this evil spirit. Shiyeshboy, Kacha Nochosh, and so it was with the serpent. Komazim Shaosa, everything that the serpent did, Loidibel Midatoi Shel Samuel, everything that's being said is actually Samuel. Very interesting Medrash. Because basically it exonerates the serpent. But let's come back to our Shabbos and the lighting of the candles, right? So there are three things happening here in the Medrash. Omru Malach Esher, you've got the angels who want to turn out Adam Arishon's light. They object to the fact that Adam has so much talent, so much divinity, has so much art, has so much sense. They're livid, right? That is exactly like the Mishnah that says "Hamachaber Saner Mipnei Hagoyim." They're like the Parsim that we said, those Farsis, that the Rabbit said that they don't allow people to have light in their house. The only place they allow you to have light is in their temple. That's exactly what the angels were saying about me. He's not entitled. From the answer that God gives them, he says, all this great art that you make here in heaven, he does down there. And what's more, he calls names. God is saying, you've got no right to object to his light. So, but they say, no, that kind of light belongs in heaven, doesn't belong on earth. Hirgishu Chava, so who knows what's going on? Chava, our mother Eve, she feels the malice and the malevolent feelings that are coming from heaven. She feels it, and Adam is completely oblivious and unaware. He's just going about his Friday, it's Erev Shabbos for him. He's fine, he's going to go to the mikveh and cut his toenails, right? Chava knows that there is a really evil conspiracy to put out his light, to kill him, right? Va'asusu masha asu v'chipsa oiroi l'hatzil miyodam. And so she does what she does to put out the light, right? Because putting out the light, then they lose interest. They're like the Farsis. They don't mind if there's no light on earth. So light's in heaven, right? So she does what she does. Mamash, this is the mirror image of that first thing in the Mishnah. What was the second thing in the Mishnah? Omru malachei ha'shoresim ein onu boim be'etzer. When God said to them, you know, he's fine, so then the angels say, well, we just better kill him. That we better make sure that he doesn't find favor in God's eyes, and we better make sure that he sins, right? So they are like the listim, they are like the robbers, the kidnappers, that the rabbit said that if your person extinguishes the flame so that they shouldn't see there's anybody there. Not the flame isn't the risk, that the person. So the angels go looking for Adam Arishon to kill him, right? So Chava, Adam is going about his day, Chava realizes that they're out to get him. So what does she do? She did what she did. She puts out the light. She kills his light so that they don't realize he's there anymore. What was the third one? Right? A person who has this evil spirit inside them, they are depressed, they have this melancholy, and they can't bear to look at themselves, right? That's exactly what happened with Chava. Because we learn in the Gemara in Shabbos, B'shor Shebuchat Nochash al Chava, when the Nochash, when the serpent who is being ridden by Samuel, the angel with the six wings, right? When he comes to Chava, he doesn't just talk her into eating from the tree of knowledge. The Gemara says, Hitil bo zoyhamo, he injects her with corruption. What does it mean to be injected by corruption? You know, if Samuel, right, if the devil, the Malach HaMavos, the Yetzirah, right, I mean, whatever name we want to call Satan, right, if he comes inside your head for whatever reason, and then he leaves, how do you feel? You feel dirty, right? Feel disgusted and you feel corrupted, right? So why does Chava now turn the light off? Because she can't bear to see herself. So the third level of the Mishnah Mipnei Ruach Ro, that's exactly what's happening here. She had no choice to put out the light, because now when she once she's been basically invaded by evil, right? She's been ridden by this Samael. Now, what, she should be there in the presence of Adam in the light. She can't bear it anymore. She didn't invite him in. Nimtzas. So from these three things, now you can see the connection between the Mishnah, which talks about the three mitzvahs, and the previous Mishnah, which talks about Kol HaMechaber extinguishing the lights. You can see now there's a clear connection. They follow one from the other. Nimtzas, Chava Peturim Me'oinesh, Mishloishu Tamim Alonis. So Chava is guiltless, blameless, for any one of three reasons. Va'adarab, on the contrary. Bikshal Hogin Al Odom Erishin, her whole reason for getting involved here was to protect Odom, because he's the one who calls names. He's the one who names things. Shalayaziku loy balek nufayim, so that these winged creatures, whatever they are, shouldn't harm him. Magia lo scha mitzvah mitzvah. So then she did a mitzvah. If she did a mitzvah, she's entitled to a scha, a reward. The reward for a mitzvah is a mitzvah. Now, I want to say that this is a really big chiddush. I know it's a big chiddush because I thought it up, but I think it's a beautiful chiddush because it's another way of looking at Chava, the whole misogynist things. Like we can read these stories over again, and bring a ra'aya from the Mishnah that, you know, the truth is I'm not the first one to think of this, and that the people Rabbeinu HaKodesh putting together the Mishnah, Reb Meir, and the people who came before them, they also knew this. And they put it there for us, that if we want to find it, we can find it. We don't have to go along with the official dogma. You know, that if we want to just scratch the surface of the Gemara a little bit, we already see a whole other image of who woman is and what the real story is. So let's look at Mishnah 1, Mishnah Aleph, the first Mishnah in the second Perek. Esrim v'shtaim oisi oisi yisad, 22 fundamental letters, or letters of Yesod. Sholosh Imois, three mothers. V'sheva Kufulois, and seven doubles. V'shteimes Ripshutois, and 12 simple ones. So there are 22 letters divided into three categories. Mother letters, there are three mother letters. There are double letters, and there are simple letters, 12 simple letters. Sholosh Imois, the three mothers. Aleph Mem Shin. The three mother letters are called Aleph, Mem, and Shin. Everybody knows what the double letters are, right? Base can take a dagesh, right? So it's base, vase, gimel, dalet, chaf can be kaf, pei, fei, and so on. So there are seven letters that have two sounds. But the mother letters, meaning the most, I guess the most important letters, the deepest secret letters, are Aleph, Mem, Shin. Yesoidan kaf zechus v'kaf choyva. They are based in the idea of a pan of merit and a pan of guilt, like the old moznaim, right? The scales, where on one side you have a pan in which you put the guilt, and another one you have the pan in which you put the virtues, and you see which weighs more, the mitzvahs or the averas, the choiva or the zechus, the loshin, and then there's the tongue, chak machriya bin taim, which divides between the two. Sholosh Imois, these three letters, Aleph Mem Shin, Mem Doi Memes, Mem is silent, Mem doesn't make a sound, silent. Shin Shorekes, the letter Shin hisses, Shin. Aleph, Chok Machriya Bin Tayim, it's in between the two, it's like the tongue that can push on either way to the kaf choyva or the kaf zechus. This is the first Mishnah and the second Perek. And basically, this second perek, we're going to be dealing with these three mother letters and their properties. So let's go back and have a look. Let's read the notes. Note number 5. Oisiois Yisod. Letters of Yisod. And you know, Yisod is the second to last of the Sefirot, right? You have Keser, Chochma, Bino, and the three top ones. And then you have Chesed, Gevura, Tiferes, and Netzach, Hoid, and Yisod. The last one is Yisod, and then underneath it is Malchus. The tenth sphere is called Malchus, but really Malchus is in a sense like the Keter of the world below, and it starts another tree underneath it. Oisiois Yisod. So if the Mishnah calls them Oisiois Yisod, letters of Yisod, it's telling us that these letters are connected to the Sephira of Yisod. It doesn't just mean fundamental letters. There's something about letters that's associated with the Sephira of Yisod. So, note number 5, Oisiois Yisod, Pirish Oisiois Yisod, Kulam Bebechinas Tzadik Yisod Oilam. The ninth Sephira of Yisod is associated with the Tzadik, because the Tzadik is called Yisod Oilam. He's the foundation of the world. As we're going to see, it's not just a nice thing. The Tzadik is the foundation of the world, but there's something really profound and metaphoric. Ki ho'oisiois atzman mizdavkois achasim asheni lohoilid milin. Because letters, really, they couple with one another. You know, one letter is not a word. But two letters, an aleph and a base, that already makes a word, av, father. We'll turn them around, base aleph, ba, to come, right? So letters couple with one another and sort of give birth to words. As we're going to be seeing, the letters, these 22 letters, they are interchangeable with one another, and they couple with one another, and they work with one another in different ways. They blend, and they form these 231 gates. Because there are 231 ways that you can put one letter with another. And then there's another 231 ways that the letters can go backwards, and that the properties of the letters to and fro, as we're going to be seeing in the later in the Perek, there's an alternating current that flows through the universe, through these gates which are made by the letters combining with one another. And the letters form shapes, and they're not just ideas, but they're in a sense like plastic things that take up space, and they have a sound, and they have a tone, and they have a musical note, and they have, you know, they have ornaments and different things that are attached to them. Each of the 22 letters, each of them is packed full, jam-packed with all kinds of mysteries and allusions and metaphors and secrets. The word oir, which means light, is equal to 307. Aleph is 1. Vav is 6, Resh is 207, which is, Resh Zayin means a secret, a mystery. Oir, light, is a mystery. Right? What does it mean, light is a mystery? Right? Inside the letters are a garment, the letters are the cloak for the divinity that flows into the universe, as we're going to be learning that in a sense the world is made up of numbers and letters. And like, you know, one of the things that we've noticed in the 20th century is that there are formulas that describe the way the universe operates. I mean, going back to Newton, and the inverse square law, and in 20th century there was the famous E equals MC squared. If you think of that in terms of the Aleph base, in the terms of, you know, that, then it's as though numbers are reality. What is the reality in the number? That's the oir, that's the light that is flowing, that is there inside, which you can't see. You can't pull a number two apart. You can't pull the speed of light apart and say, show me the light inside it. V'hasoid komes toicha ois. And the mystery is there inside the letter. Hi ho oira gonis. That when we talk about the hidden light, that's what we mean. I mean, the speed of light is a great example. The speed of light, it's an amazing thing to discover the speed of light and what it means in terms of time stopping, and, you know, the relativity and all. But take the number and put it apart, you won't find any light inside it. Ubehe ogdom mispashtois beinem adas. But when you put the letters, when you put the formula E equals M, C, and so on, when you put letters together, they have this incredible meaning. They describe things that are gigantic, bigger than the earth. And the same way, you take the Aleph and you put it with a Hey, and you put it with a Yud, and so on. They describe God. Note number 6, Imois. Lama Koro Oison Imois. Why does the Mishnah call the mother letters, mother letters? We learn in Bava Kamma, Midiktonu Ovois, you know, the Masechta Bava Kamma begins, talks about Ovois Melochois, Ovois Nezikin, damages. So the Mishnah says, the Gemara says, Midiktonu Ovois, if you're calling them Ovois, obviously, Miklal the Ikka told us there must be offspring, right? If you're calling them fathers, then there must be like sons, babies, children, whatever. I mean, well, why else call them fathers, right? And so, you have Avos Melochos and Shabbos, right? You have 39 categories of work, right? And then from the 39 categories of work, you have all these toldos, children, right? This is a child of that, you know. Certain kinds of food preparation you're not allowed to do because that is a tolder of dosh. It's not exactly threshing, but if you take, if you start stamping on your watermelons, you know, in order to get juice out of them, you know, then that's a little bit like threshing. So that's a tolder of that. That's a child. That's a son of the father. There's a category, a class of work called writing or whatever, and then there are subcategories that come up, and these are called tolders. Why? We find that we have in Avos Hatuma, right? You have a dead body is considered Avi Avos Hatuma, grandfather, because it can give birth to lesser kinds of tuma. How come if these letters are so important in that they have subcategories, why don't we call them Avot? Why are they called Imot? Right? What is he trying to tell us by calling us Imot? If they don't have subcategories, why call them mothers? V'lamali prishla maikon lafkimin. Why doesn't the Mishnah tell us what the point is? You know, if there's no point, then that doesn't make sense. V'alei yesh soid komes b'gavan. It goes without saying that if the Sefer Yetzirah uses a phrase, then there's a good reason for it, right? Midik toni emois. If the Mishnah says mothers, v'lo yisparsha, and it doesn't say why it calls mothers, miklal de'ekasoidus kamuzim v'rozen amikin, then it's telling us, yeah, they're called mothers because they have secrets inside them. Not because they have children, because if it was children, we would call them fathers. But no, because they have mystery. They have secrets. They have buried inside them all kinds of possibilities. Not because of what's outside them, then would they be called fathers, but no, what's inside them. Imois, looking for in the Torah, where does the word Imois come? One of the things that I do with Sefer Yetzirah, so every word in the Sefer, try and go and find where does it occur the first time in the Torah. The word Imois, doesn't, first of all, when we talk about mothers, we don't call them imois, we call them imahot. We put a hey in there. Imois here, the only place we find it is in the story after Pinchas kills Zimri and Cosmi. It says in the name of the Jew who was killed was Zimri ben Solu. He was the Nosi of the Shevet Shimon. And the name of the woman who was killed, the Midianis, the Midianite woman, was Cosbi Bastur, Rosh Umois, base of the Midian. Rosh Umois. So how do you translate Rosh Umois? The head of the mothers, base of the father's house, the Midian. It's a very difficult thing to translate. What is Rosh Umois? But the word Umois is exactly the same as Imois. It's written the same way. So, the word Uma, meaning a nation, has the same root as the word Aim, meaning mother. In the Sefer Ksava Kabbalah, he says, when is a nation called an Uma? Because she Goyim moishel al amim v'goyim rabim, when a nation predominates over many other nations, in other words, like a culture, right? Like you have the English language culture, you have, people are complaining all over the world that Hollywood is, corrupting all the European cultures and the Asian cultures and the African cultures with its message and so on. So then you would say that America is an ummah because its culture is dominant over many other cultures. So then the word umma then has the word aim in it. Because then the American culture is like the mother to those other cultures. And the Ksava Kabbalah uses the word muta folk, right? Mother folk. The mother culture. He was a German rabbi, by the way. Muta folk. So then, if we take that concept and apply it to the letters, there's something about the culture of the letters Aleph, Mem, Shin that is going to pervade all aspects of the other 19 letters. Yesoidon Kaf Choyva V'Kaf Sechus, their fundament are these two pans of merit and debit, guilt and virtue and so on. So the word yesoidon, I want to say, is the same as yesoidin. Yesoidan. That basically all forms of judgment in the universe follow from these three mother letters. In the previous perek we talked about the way the three basic elements, fire, water, and air, were manifest, right? First you had the sephiros, and then there's a split, five spheres on this side, five on that, and you have this bris, this rachamim, this flow, this simple desire flows through them, and we talked about that and how they become this ruach, the ruach hakodesh, and how the ruach hakodesh gets breathed out and becomes the ruach meruach, which divides and becomes water, meruach, and then esh, mimayim, the fire that comes from the water, and so on. And that's really how we finished the last perek. We didn't really have the idea of justice and withholding yet. This is, where are we going to find it? How does it come into being? It comes into being from these letters, or with these letters. They are the medium. Note number 8. Kafschus, the pan of merit. Kedisa, the Mishnah says in Ovois, Vehavei dan es kol odom lekafschus. One of the things that we're obliged to do is judge everybody favorably, right? That's how we usually translate this phrase. Dan es kol odom lekafschus. You've got to give people the benefit of the doubt, and don't be in a hurry, rush to just judge people unfavorably. So my question is, if we look at that phrase, have done as kol odom lekaf zechus, it is not actually what it says. It says have done as kol ha'odom. judge all the person in the pan of merit. It doesn't say judge all persons. They would say, have it done kol adam. It says, have it done as kol ha'adam. All the person. What does that mean? You have to judge also that part of him that sins, that you also have to judge favorably. You have to find some kind of way of saying that chelik, not to say, oh look, the guy did really bad, he's a terrible sinner, but you know what, he keeps Shabbos, so I'm gonna overlook the fact that he beats his wife and children. He's a Shabbos keeper. You know, that's not what we mean. Have it done as kol ha'adam. All of the person, even those parts that you don't like, even those parts that you think are terrible, you have to go in and find some of the good inside there. That's the meaning, have it done as kol ha'adam lekafsachus. And then, kaf choiva, what is the pan of debit, of guilt, of blame. How to have it done is kolodom nekofchav. We have to avoid just judging people and finding blame. A person has to keep on looking until you find something good to say. Even in that very place where the person did something wrong. You know, there's a halacha, if somebody is charged with murder, and they come to Beis Din, and the Rabbonim check the witnesses, and the witnesses says, we told him not to pull the trigger, and we warned him that if he pulls the trigger, we're going to come to Beis Din, and we're going to bear witness, and we told him that it was a capital offense, you know, like they go through the whole thing, right? And everybody agrees that this person is guilty and should be punished by death. If everybody agrees, then he's not punished. It's not chayef. Person's not chayef misa. Person can't be punished for murder and can't be put to death unless there's at least one rabbi, one judge, one dayan in the Sanhedrin who can find a reason for saying innocent, not guilty. If all the judges are agreed that he's guilty, he walks. It's completely different than in an American trial by jury, right? If everybody agrees he's guilty, it means that they didn't do their job, because you have to be able to speak up for a human being. There's some good there, there's some reason, there's even in their madness there's some sanity, even in their evil there's some good, and there's some rationale for what they did, looking from their point of view why they did what they did. Somebody here amongst all you rabbis has to be able to say, this is why he did it, and he's nuts and this, but he doesn't deserve to be put to death, right? If all the rabbonim there agree that he has to die, then he walks, because then the rabbonim are not, they're not really being done. They're not doing their job, then. That's not legal. It's a very interesting way of looking at law, right? So you have, on the one side, you have kafsachus, pan of merit. On the other side, you have kaf choiva, the pan of blame. But even in there, you have to find something mitigating, right? And then lo shem machriya beinem, you have this tongue, right? You know, imagine you're holding these scales, right, by a chain, and you've got the pan on this side, the pan on that side, and then you have like a tongue in the middle that points either to one direction or another. The Pasuk says in Mishlei Mobis V'chaim B'yad Aloshin, life, death and life are in the hands of the tongue. What does that mean? Why is it chosen? Why this idea of the tongue, right? What it means is this, Ki gam acha amasa efshe lahopcha kulim min ara la toiv al yedei dibra. You know, a person can do a terrible thing. I can walk up to somebody in the street with a gun and shoot him dead. It's a terrible thing, right? Ah, what could you say good about me after I walk up with take a revolver, put it to this guy's head and shoot point blank in cold blood, right? It's bad, right? But what happens if you arrest me and then I tell you, hey, look under his coat, he's wearing a suicide bomb underneath his coat. I shot him dead because he was heading for the subway because he was going to blow himself up on the subway. Oh, changes everything, right? Because you pointed to in your noi, if a person explains what he was doing with Kavanosa and explains what his intention was, befeirush, umeya bidibure amas, and then sheds light on the act. She called amas lehoye commissioner line so that the act no longer looks the way it did. Ela she Kavanosa basis amas kach v'kach. The reason that he did the act was such and such a reason. Nimtz she'en amas seif hadavaka, so the act is not the final thing. We always think, the act is final. It's done, it's done. No. The act isn't the final thing at all. Ela machshavtoy akaduma, the original thought, hanifrid bidiburoy, which gets explained and expressed with the words, that la'achra masu husayf dova, that's the final act. The original thought is the final act. So when we talk about the loshoin hos machria, as soon as we're talking about letters that are going to become words, we have the idea of the tongue that is machria, the tongue that can make things go either to the right or to the left, into the pan of merit or the pan of debit, because that's the power of the tongue. Behind Zohar Kodesh, the Zohar Kodesh says, Tochazi, come and see. And everything in the Zohar Kodesh is Tochazi. In the Gemara, everything is Toshma, come listen. The Chachamim would say, come and listen. Because that's the most that we can do with scholarship, is I can tell you things and you have to listen. But when you're learning Kabbalah, that's absolutely no use whatsoever, because you can't hear these things. Because I can't tell you anything that's secret, right? Because they're secret. How could I tell you? Oh, you mean I tell you and now you know? Then it wasn't a secret. It was just ignorance. You're ignorant. Now I enlightened you. That's not... But when I tell you a secret, it doesn't matter how many times I tell you, you still won't know it. Right? So it's not about Toshma, come and listen. The Zohar Kodesh says, Tochazi, come, look. Where do you look? I'm going to talk to you, but you have to look inside yourself, because that's where it is. You know, I'm not telling you anything new. I can only tell you things which make you remember the things that you already knew, the things that you can see inside yourself, and hopefully I will say something that will enlighten something inside you, and you say, ah, now I see something I didn't see before, but it was inside me. And those are the secrets of the Kabbalah, right? I can tell you something, but it's not what I know that you need to know. You need to know what you used to know, what you knew before you were born. Those are the real secrets that you have to remember. Tochazi, come look, says the Zohar Kodesh. Machshava reishis hadikra. The machshava comes first. The thought is before anything. We begin the machshava, because it's thought, it's inside. A thought is inside and can't be known. It's hidden. So what happens when that thought starts to spread? Meaning, it starts to evolve, develop. So the thought comes to that place where your spirit dwells. And so on and so on. And then the Zohar Kodesh describes how it becomes speech. And even though it's hidden, so then your breath becomes a sound, right? What is your breath, right? What is it? It's inside you, it's air, that's all it is, right? But something happens inside you and it becomes sound, right? In your larynx, as you're breathing it out, you have the ability to create vocalization or sub-vocalization. So what happens then? Even though it's hidden inside, that spirit, that breath becomes the voice. What is the voice made of? It's made of fire and water and breath, right? The heat of you inside and the moisture of your humidity, of the water inside your lungs, the vapor and the air which is inside you. Ba'osi ledabro mila, and you come to speak a word. La'afgo milin teritzin. You're just trying, you know, you're going to express simple, straightforward speech. Bekatistaka bedagin, if you look at all these different levels of how your thought became, went from being something completely hidden. Nobody could point, you know, not even an MRI machine can say, oh, he's having a thought in there, and this is what the thought is, right? There's no way that you can really say how that thought then became this expression. Hu machshava, that thought, he bino. So the machshava travels and becomes bino. Hu koil, that's the voice. Hu dibur, that's the word. Bekul echad, and it's all one, because the word has the voice in it, which has the meaning in it, which has the understanding in it, which has the thought in it. Vehihi machshava reshisa dekoila, and that is the very original thought that you had. Zohar Kodesh is, I'm bringing the bare bones of this Zohar Kodesh, because there's something here at the end that I want to point to. Do I have a period? There's no separation, there's no splitting. The original thought is there combined, amalgamates with the Bina and becomes the breath, and becomes the voice, and becomes the word, and so on. Elekul echad, kshur echad, everything is tied together, it's a little knot. The word that comes out of your mouth is like a little knot, and everything inside that knot is the original thought is tied in. As you're listening to me speaking, my words are like little knots that contain air and fire and water and heat and everything, but more than that, they contain that original idea that I wanted to convey. Di machshava mamish is kashim ba'ein. And so, what is that thought? The original thought is connected to the Ein. It is connected to that place where thoughts come from. So here you're listening to my voice, and my voice's words. Inside those words are all those different levels, and it's all connected, because inside those words is the original thought, and the original thought is still connected to the nothing. And nothing is being separated. It's all still there. V'dohi Hashem Echad u'Shmo Echad. God is one and His name is one. Meaning, what is the name of God? The name of God is that expression of God outside. God goes from being the Ein to become the Ani. Baldo Anoisin Imre Shofeksiv, and so it talks about the tribe of Naphtali. Naphtali gives beautiful words. I think it's very interesting. In this Zohar Kodesh, there's some really deep ideas. You know, each of the tribes is associated with one of the months. The tribe of Naphtali is associated with the month of Adar. The month of Adar is associated with laughter. Right? Tzchoik is associated with the spleen. And what is laughter? Well, laughter is an expression of what? First we go into, you know, somebody begins a joke and says, a man walks into a pub, right? So as soon as the person says the opening line, right, I've got a little tension, right? Basically, laughter is the release of that tension. I give you the punchline, ha 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 ha, and my tension is released. What is the meaning of a joke? So remind me to come back and go deeper into what this meaning of the Zohar is. But then the Zohar says, immediately after Naphtali, who gives us this release of tension, comes the bracha of Yosef. And Yaakov Avinu, he's blessing his children, each of them. After Naphtali comes Yosef, he says, what does he say? So first, let's finish the thought. Naphtali is the end. Naphtali is the laughter. He's the release. Do gufo, what is the release? This is the body. Siyume de gufo, what is the end of the body? And the end of the body, in the Zohar Kodesh, the end of the body is the penis, right? Do dichsiv bein poiras Yosef. Yosef is the fruitful bough that grows on the tree. The word Yosef means to increase, right? Bein poiros alei ayin. Yosef is like the bough on the tree that grows towards the you know, by the well of the water. What does that mean? What is the Zohar Kodesh saying? Words connect us to one another, right? All words are connected to the Midas Yisod, to the foundation. What is the Midas Yisod? That's the ninth sphere. It's the sphere of connection, which is also associated with the word Milo, right? The word Milo means a word, right, in Hebrew, but it also means a circumcision, because that's another way that we relate to one another, right? We communicate with one another. It's also called knowing. Das. And the Zohar Kodesh here is giving us these mysterious hints. Yosef, you know, who was Yosef? Yosef was the tzaddik, right? He was the tzaddik Yisoid Olam. He was the foundation of the world, because he is the one who had to, like, really learn to control his sexuality, right? And then eventually he meets his brothers, and he tries to hold back from them, and then he can't hold back from them anymore. And then everything turns out fine, and he becomes the brother who takes care of them. And Yosef is the one who grows, right? That's the meaning of the word Yosef. The meaning of Imre Shofer, to give beautiful words, these are connected to the Midas Yisad. These are the body. In the body we have the idea of connecting both in the mouth, and this is the idea of the Lashon, the tongue. This is how we began this thought. We have the Kaf Zuchus on one side, we have the Pan of Merit, on the other side we have the Pan of Debit, and we have the Lashon in the middle. We have the tongue in the middle. That's going to decide whether it goes to this way or to this way. The Siyuma de Gufa, which is Naftali, gives these beautiful words. What does he do with his words? He fixes things. In the same way that that Yosef then is going to, with his act. I feel like that by saying that I've made things more obscure than it was before. All right, so I think we really need to stop here. And we can come back next week and Mirz Hashem.